So one of the things that I found, I booked him out of March, and one of the things I found when I was hacking was this little notebook, which was actually the first time I wrote this book. Or I guess sort of the second time. The first time I wrote this book, I wrote three stories about a woman, an unnamed woman. I didn't name her until three quarters of the way through writing the book. But I wrote three stories about this woman named Andrea Byrne, unnamed then. And it was about a woman watching her friend get married and watching her friend get pregnant and watching her friend get divorced. And she's single and childless and all these things, and she's sort of trying to figure out what it means to be an adult. And she's witnessing somebody else know what it means to be an adult, right? In that sort of like accepted, technically accepted kind of way. And so I wrote all those stories, and I was like, man, I do not want to write this book, because I know what it means to write this book. Because if you write a book about someone being single, then you have to, first of all, you have to go on book tour and talk about being single for like a year, which I've done. So don't ask me that question later. And also, like, you have to think about it, and you have to kind of explore what it means. With any book that I write, if I know what the question of the book is, that means I have to have an answer for it by the end. Even if the answer does not apply to the person in the book and the characters in the book, I have to know what it means for me. So for me, this book was like, what does it mean to be an adult? Which is actually like an incredibly hard question to answer. And if you know the answer, tell me later. But then I put it away for a year and I actually wrote a ghost story, which I was really not very good at. And then I finally decided maybe I would try to play around with it again. And this was this little tiny notebook here was the first attempt at it. And I remember writing it. It was like in New York. And I had a friend who she had all these little notebooks and she kept giving to me. And I was like, I write long form. Like, this notebook will do nothing for me. But you know what? It's in here. So I'm going to read that first. And it is different from how it turned out in the book, but only so slightly. A book is published. It's a book about being single. Everyone I know tells me about this book. My mother orders a copy for me on Amazon. It shows up one day, a surprise in the mail with a note without a note attached, and it takes me a week to figure out who sent it to me. My coworker Nina hands me her copy when she's finished reading it, even though I'd never expressed an interest in reading it. My sister-in-law, who lives in the woods in New Hampshire, who's dedicated her life to taking care of her dying child, brings it up on the phone to me on my regular Sunday morning phone call with her. Old college friends post links of her views of it onto my Facebook wall and say things like, sounds like something you'd like, or this reminded me of you. The book is written by a conventionally attractive woman who is now married and is a critical yet blissful remembrance of her single day. I go out on a date with a man I meet online, and it does not go well. He's the one who drinks too much this time around. He got there early, and two bourbons in before I ever get there, and I'm patient but then sour about it when I feel like he's touching me too much. And before we part ways, he asks me if I've read the book. And I say, no, have you? And he says, no, I don't read a lot, but it's you. I can tell it's totally about you. And I say, you're single too. Why isn't it about you? And he says, oh, this is just temporary for me. It's like a horror story, right? I go to my therapist and say, why is single the only thing people think of when they think of me? I'm other things too, and this delights her. An assertion is being made, a piece of statement about my life at last. Well, tell me who you are, she says. What other statements are true? Well, I'm a woman, I say. Good, yes. I'm a designer, yes. I'm technically a Jew, okay. I'm a New Yorker, good. I start to feel unsettled. Truly, I'm more than that. I'm a friend, I say. I'm a daughter. In my head, I think I'm lonely. I'm a drunk. I'm a failed artist. I'm a shrieker in bed. I'm the captain of the sinking ship that is my flesh. And then in here, I just wrote, insert more weirdness. To my therapist, I say, I'm a brunette. I read the book, well, the first 100 pages of it. The book is a lie. It's a lie pretty women tell themselves. It's a lie older women tell themselves. I'm being lied to, I think. I'm actively being lied to by this woman in this book in society. Who is this book for, I think? This book is not for me. So there's two differences from this than what appears in the book. If you've read the book, so you know it's a little bit different, but not quite, it's pretty close. One is that I have her say she's a drunk in this, and then in the book I actually call her a drinker, a because I thought I'd cut her some slack. And then also in the book, I don't have her read the book because she has better things to do with her time. So I'm going to read two chapters from the book. If we run out of time, let me know. Someone will let me know. Who? Somebody. You, yes. The woman who gave me the flowers will let me know when to shut up. This is from a chapter called Chloe. Almost all the chapters are named after women. Because I'm a feminist. Not named after men. And this was reminding me the other day, like, my last St. Music came out of Italy, and I did this big book tour last year with my Italian publisher, who's really a great guy, and he basically acted as my translator the entire time. So every time I did an interview, I would talk about feminism, and then, like, three quarters away through the tour, he was like, can you not mention feminism, like, every single time? And I was like, no, that is, I will mention that forever. Forever I will mention feminism, which feels like an obvious thing to say, but in Italy, maybe not so much. We meet at a mutual friend's barbecue, Baron and I. Our mutual friend's name is Deb, and she had told me in advance to look out for him. Newly single, she had texted. Like, newly, newly. Fresh out of the womb, I texted back. Successful, creative, smart, she texted. A catch, I texted. In a year, he'll be a catch, she texted. Right now, he's a good time. Am I not good enough for a catch, I texted. She didn't text back for 6 hours. Sorry, she texted. Or... there was another pause. Am I mistaken that you want to have a good time? She texted. I'd wanted to argue so badly, but I couldn't. Baron and I have an extremely long conversation about potato salad because Deb has made two kinds of potato salad, the creamy kind and the vinegary kind. It's a dumb, jokey conversation, kind of worthless, actually, but he looks at me with obvious interest and desire. I get a little hot in my pants. He has a shaved head, the early male pattern baldness shave. He cleans his glasses a lot, and I point this out, and he shrugs and says, I can't stand fingerprints. I take his glasses from him, breathe on them, and wipe them on the end of my silky shirt. Like new, I say, and hand them back. You're helpful, he says. At some point in the conversation, we realize we live 10 blocks from each other. Convenient, I say, and grin. Deb lives in a garden apartment. There are children running in and out of the garden in the apartment, and one of them screeches, and I shudder. Children, ugh, I say. I have a child, Baron says. Just because I don't like children doesn't mean I can't like you, I say. And I touch his arm and feel like both a failure and a success at the same time, because even though I've already fucked this up, I was probably supposed to anyway. Two normal people walk away from each other right then and there, but instead he gives me a ride home and parks in front of a fire hydrant on my street, and then we make out in the front seat of his car while I ignore the presence of the child seat in the back. He's really aggressive, tongue in the mouth, ear, throat, squeezing my breast hard through my blouse. I'm both mortified and aroused. I put my hand in his dick through his pants, and he stops and says, you're the first person I've been with besides my ex-wife in 12 years. I say, whoa, that's a lot. I say, whoa, that's a lot for a first date. And he says, this wasn't a date. And I feel sort of suddenly forced and damaged. Okay, I say, I'm done. I put my hand on the door, but I give him a few seconds to apologize, which he does. He says, I'm sorry, I don't know what I'm doing, I don't know if I'm coming or going, I'm having every emotion at once. He takes my hand and kisses it. You're beautiful, he says, you're beautiful, and sexy, and you should let me take you out and we'll do this right. Toxic, says my co-worker Nina on Monday morning. Drop him immediately. He texts me on Wednesday and asks if I want to have dinner with him on Friday night. I say I have plans because I'm trying to play hard to get, which has absolutely never worked for me my entire life. He says he can't see me on Saturday because he has a daughter that night. I fold instantly. I'll move something around, I say. I think a restaurant in the neighborhood for this pretext because we both know what is going to happen. We've been texting about the things we're going to do to each other for days. It's terrible, and it's all I want. On Friday, I take off work early and get groomed in various ways. Then I get a demon to look at my blueberries. Then I allow myself the indulgence of a MoMA visit. I pay $25 and go up to the top floor and wend my way through the museum. Eventually, I find myself lingering around with a permanent collection. All that work those people made for decades, and here's their greatest hits. One or two pieces plucked from storage. Better than one piece than none at all, I guess. I miss painting, even the fumes I miss. I've spent the past 13 years looking for a smell to replace it. Litter on the sidewalk and his fumes. A cocktail at the bar before a reservation. I'm 38 and he is 42. I'm just starting over, he tells me. Sometimes I feel like I'm done, I tell him. Dinner is fast, but I still try to enjoy myself because I love food. At the weirdest, darkest, most stressful moments of my life, I always make sure to have a nice meal. I order a steak. I want it rare, I tell the waitress. Like bloody red. Carnivore, he says. That's me, I say. We drink two glasses of wine each, and I say, you know what we should have done? And he says, gotten a bottle? I never planned that right, I say. And he says, me neither. And we smile at each other. Let's just get along. I think all we have to do is get along. He walks to my apartment, not his, which he claims is a mess. Wearing a hat and a chambray shirt and shorts and loafers, and he has an easy stride. I'm wearing a black dress, loose and summery, and I feel pretty and intellectually engaged after my day of art. Also, I feel drunk. At home, there is bourbon, and I tell him that while we walk, and he tells me I'm a dream girl. Like, he literally says, I feel like you were sent to me as a present from the heavens above, and I laugh so hard, but I love it. When we get to my studio, he surveys it and nods, the art, the stacks of books, the pots of pans, they go dramatically from the ceiling rack, while I shakily, excitedly pour us two bourbons neat. We clean glasses and then drink quickly. This is so exciting, he says. I'm so excited. I boldly take off my dress. I'm just standing there naked in front of him. I love all the curves, he says. Hips, yes. He is nodding at me, approving of me. I realize I'm desperate for the approval of this man who was married, this father of one, someone else's, now mine. He picks up his hat and then his shirt and his pants. He's pale white and nearly hairless, and I realize he has trimmed his pubic hair. Did you? I point to his crotch. I thought I was supposed to, he says. I read it in GQ. I really haven't seen it before, I say. I think I went a little too far, he says. I waxed my chest, too. It hurt. I waxed, too, I say. Just here, though, I motion to my crotch. It looks nice on you, he says. Normal. Does it make you feel uncomfortable? It makes me feel uncomfortable. Our confession's done, we kiss, and then he's on me, and it's fast, it's happening, it's on. He bends me over my couch, and from behind begins to pound me. There's a mirror nearby, and I can see that he's watching himself, watching his facial expression. This moment has so little to do with me. After a while, we try another position, and then another position, and then another position, and then another one. Can we go back, I say? What? Huh? He gasps, pushing his glasses up, looks at me. I like what we were doing before, like 10 minutes ago. Hold on, he says, and he stops to clean his glasses with my nearby underpants. Then we rearrange our bodies to the old position, and we go very slowly, and it's fantastic, but then he starts to speed up, and he goes faster and harder, and it feels like he's trying to murder me with his dick. And I say, slow down a little, baby. And he says, I can't. I'm going to come. Don't make me stop. So I don't, because this is his first time fucking a person other than his wife in 12 years. And this is me. And I want him to remember it as great. I let him pound me for another minute. And he orgasms loud, certainly loud enough to be heard from the street below. And he's just so proud of himself. And almost immediately, I begin to hate him, but also desire him even more, too. There's always someone. Always. I get myself off with a little assistance from him and orgasm in a minor key. And then we sit at my kitchen table naked in blueberries, which have ripened since I bought them and left them in the sun by the window. I talk happily while I shove blueberries in my mouth. I'm always such an idiot after sex. At some point, I realize he stopped eating blueberries and he's watching me eat, and I'm still eating, and then I finish the entire bowl. I sit back. What? I say. I've got to go. I'm sorry, he says. He puts on all his clothes. I'm still naked. I'm just sitting there watching him make his exit. Am I being weird? He asks. I don't know, I say. Are you? And the most fun line trade. And then he's gone. No evidence left behind except the light blue imprint of his fingers on my upper arm, which is where he held me too tightly. The next day, he apologizes by a text for fucking me and leaving, and I forgive him. He bantered a bit about the sex we had. There is acknowledgement that he's hard on one side of the conversation, and I'm wet on the other side. Then he has to go. His kid is coming. How'd it go? Asks Nina, Monday morning, first thing. He freaked out and left after sex, I say. Oh well, says Nina. How'd it go? Texts Deb. He's really nice, I text back. Do you like him, she says. I don't reply. Baron and I volley text back and forth for a few days about seeing each other again. No specific plans are made, just let's hang out soon. The next week, I see him on the street. He's walking with his daughter, holding her hand with one hand, and a plastic bag of roses with the other. The green stems of carrots poking at the top of the bag. She's wearing a blue-flowered backpack. Her mother must be of Hispanic descent. She's a beautiful little girl. Baron sees me coming from a block away, waves, and then crosses to the other side of the street. How dare you? I text him later. You told me you hate children. He texts back. Stop there on that chapter. There's more. They continue to be terrible to each other. You guys okay? I need a drink. All right, and we'll read one more chapter. It's interesting that the two things that you mentioned are reading tonight, so we're in sync. So this is a chapter called The Actress. I think I'm going to read all the way to the end. Do we have time?
Yeah.
Right. An actress moves into my apartment building. I don't think it's permanent. Her name is never added to the slot next to the buzzer, but it's an extended stay. She's famous enough that I recognize her face as someone I had seen on the screen once. I'm not famous enough that I can remember her name or the title of the film. However, I did remember the screen, Lincoln Square. I saw the movie my freshman year of high school with my entire family a few months before my father died of a heroin overdose. He was asleep for most of the film. He snored and my mother tapped and shoved and hit him until he woke up. So it's no reflection on the quality of the actress's talent that I can't remember the performance. My father's just better, that's all. She's like dark-skinned, the actress. I think of Indian descent, but also French. She's 8 years older than I am, and looks at least a few years younger than I do. Who can judge these things, really, but I choose to, so I shall, and will, and do. Her eyes are honey-colored and almond-shaped, reflect the sunshine. Her hair is black and long and wavy, tangled, casual curls. She's casual in the summer in long, flowy skirts and oversized straw hats. And in the fall, she wears tiny moto jackets and tight black jeans. And in the winter, she wears long, tailored wool coats from European designers, only if she's wearing her shoes. The actress lives in an apartment on the top floor, one of the newly renovated ones, with a balcony and a view of the river and the city beyond. The permanent resident there is her lover, a German man with blonde hair, thick sideburns, and handsome lines etched into his face, a thousand stories to tell, all living in his skin. They hold hands in public, in the elevator, on the sidewalk, at the cafe, second closest to her house, but never on the subway platform, because that's when they check their phones. I'm basically obsessed with her. I recognize that obsessed is a word that's overused, but what would you call this? Every day, I look in the mailroom and see if she's gotten any packages and where they're from. From that, I've noticed the following. She's a shopper. She shops a lot. I have a picture of her twirling around in front of a mirror in a fancy boutique owned by a friend giggling and drinking champagne, but she's just like the rest of us, not wanting to deal. Sometimes there are packages from her film agency. At some point during her stay, I believe she switched agencies. Three packages, hand-decorated by a child who arrived from Los Angeles, all of them are beach scenes. Palm trees, the ocean, all the shades of blue available and used to color in the waves, she was addressed as Missy's on those packages. Also, I have a Google alert on her name, and I check her IMDb page frequently, and I found her on Twitter, where she has only several thousand fans, and her tweet suggests she is not in charge of her account, some marketing firm instead, which just tweets links to the latest news about her, which I already know. Still, I don't unfollow, because what if I miss something? And I have trailed her on the street a few times. It was always by chance, at least initially. We both happened to exit the building at the same time and then ended up walking in the same direction, but then I kept going longer than I needed to, missing a turn off the subway or the bridge or the ferry, just to see where she'd land. Once she went to the juice place, there were a few trips to the cafe. One time, I think she was on a power walk. She kept going and going. That was the time I was 30 minutes late to work. I mean, this is either obsession in a basic way or maybe just a high level of interest, but what about this? I casually mentioned to my coworker, Nina, who's 26 years old, that the actress is moving to my building, and she says, isn't she old? And I get mad at Nina, even though I never tell her, and I don't talk to her for 2 days until she finally notices I'm barely answering her questions, and she asks me if I'm mad at her, and I say, no, why would you think that? And then she brings me back a cookie at lunch, and I say, let me forgive her. Is that some kind of love or something, or this? I figured out where she gets her fabulous shoes from studying her packages, and I buy a pair that is the same pair she has, but obviously I bought them in different colors. Hers in a different color, hers are brown and mine are black, and they are very expensive, and I swallow when I click to purchase it. I'm sure it will be worth it. And then I wear them every day for a couple weeks, sometimes just when I'm exiting and entering the building, and then I switch them when I get to work, so I'm not wearing the same thing every day. And I do this in hopes that someday she will be wearing them too, and it also will be on the elevator at the same moment. All of this clearly pushing the boundaries of timing, but in fact it works. Within 3 weeks of my buying the shoes on a Friday, there she is, there I am with our patent leather loafers, me riding up to the 5th floor, her riding up to the 11th, and I quote and say, look, and she looks, and I say, great minds think alike, and she nods and nods some more, and then she says, I almost got the black, but I feel I have too much black already. She tilts her head, imagining her closet, I suppose, yes, too much black. And then it's my floor, and I get off because I can't follow her all the way home. That would be too much. But I feel like more of a conversation was warranted than what we had. I mean, we had the same shoes. Is it some kind of crush or this? I go to an art opening with Nina after work. I don't stay long because it's one of those days where it's hard for me to look at art. Sometimes it is hard for me to look at art because so much art is terrible, and I can tell it is a lie. But the artist is lying, and I begin to hate that art/artist for wasting my time. And sometimes it is hard for me to look at art, because the art I am witnessing is good enough to set what I do with my day in belief, which is mostly worthless except that it makes me money, and so I'm a bad artist in my own way. Tonight, the art is terrible. I down 2 glasses of wine, and then I drink another one while I'm waiting in line for the bathroom, and then I leave, and I don't say goodbye to Nina. I just text her before I get on the subway, and by the time I get home, she's texted back, I left first. When I get on the elevator in my apartment building, I hear a soft yet masculine voice ask me to please hold the door. It is the German man. I decide I'm going to make friends and make him my friend, even if the actress has no interest in me. It is a mostly innocent, slightly volatile gesture. In my head, I think I'm just being friendly. He's wearing a denim shirt with a cuffs rolled up and black jeans, and his hair is closer to gray than blonde. I realize now that I'm respecting him and not her. His face, still handsome. I say hello, and he says hello, and asks me how my day was, and I say, oh, this city, you bob, you weave, and I pretend like I'm a boxer, and punch the air, and it makes him laugh. I ask him about his apartment. I tell him I've lived in the building a long time, and I know they did a lot of work on the top floor, and I'm curious how he finds it. I do not explain how I know he lives on the top floor, and he doesn't question it. We are neighbors. I've seen him. He's seen me. I'm the girl who bobs and weaves. We are already nearly friends. He asks me if I'd like to see the apartment, and I say, anytime. And he says, sure, why don't you come up now then? I can't think of a reason not to. There's nothing waiting for me at home but my refrigerator, my laptop, and death. I take the elevator with him to the top floor. I wonder if she'll be there. I hold my breath while he opens the front door. Their apartment is spectacular. It is a rich person's apartment. A rich person with taste, who likes things minimal. There is a fair amount of furniture, but everything is expensive. The European patent leather loafer version of furniture. I look at the floors and the windows. That's supposed to be why I'm there. His floors are tiled, his windows are new, a sliding door opens onto the deck, and the bathroom there is a tub, whereas I have only an old stained plastic stall. All the fixtures gleam. It is very expensive to live here, but it is very expensive to live everywhere in the city. Not like Berlin, he sighs. But what is? I sigh in agreement. I have never been to Berlin. So, he says, you are here, I'm here, what should we do? What do you mean, I say. What does he mean? Do you want a drink or something, he says. We are neighbors, we get to know each other now. But I realize I don't want to know anything about him, and only her I'm interested in. He has that thing on her arm. I have one drink with him anyway, just to be polite. And we stand on the deck, and look out of the city, and he puts his hand on my waist, like the lower waist. And I let him keep it there for a minute because that bitch wasn't nice enough about my shoes in the elevator. Or maybe it's jealousy. What about this? A few weeks later, it's raining. Summer rain, unexpected, but no sane person minds weather like that. Rain glitters down on hair, soft, damp curls, moist, sexy skin. I'm laughing as I run through it. It was a late night at work, a deadline I didn't care about, but I finished it, it's done, and I feel dizzy and giddy. I'll never have to think about that project again. Maybe it's the last time I'll ever have a project like that. I imagine myself quitting my job. I imagine myself with a new life. The surprise of the rain lets me picture a different future for myself. Since I was pregnant, did I ever tell you that? I wasn't really a baby. It was just a few weeks old, barely formed, a concept, and then it was lifeless. I hadn't even known I was pregnant. I cannot tell you who the father was. He could have been one of three people. This was in my late 20s, still a slippery time in my life. More slippery than now. On occasion, I cry when I remember this lost baby. It's not because I ever wanted a baby. Think of the complications, long-term, short-term. I didn't even know who the father was. That is not the kind of math I want to ever try to do. But I cry anyway because it was a path I could have taken and didn't. I cry for the lost idea, the lost concept. Sometimes I cry too for who I was as an artist and what my life would have been like if only I kept going. I weep for my lost identities. I weep for my possibilities. So then I'm running in the rain and I'm giddy and happy and a little teary, imagining another life myself, one where I quit my job and I'm squeezing my brain so hard trying to figure out what's next. Do I shut down my life for a year and just travel until I figure it out? Do I volunteer my time to help change the planet? Do I stop being such a narcissist? Do I find God? Does God find me? Do I sit quietly and feel the earth rotate and breathe deeply every morning until I am calm and happy and centered and capable of being satisfied? And when I arrive home, there she is, the actress, sitting on the front steps of the apartment building, a damp cigarette in her hand, her hair a mess all around her on her shoulders, stringing black eye makeup. Screaming black eye makeup, cinematic as fuck. She's barefoot. She's not smiling. She's not enjoying this rain. She's trembling instead because, not because she's cold, but because she's devastated. I walk past her and up the steps because we're at war. And also because her shame is not for me to consume. Then I think this war is imaginary and you have felt the exact same shame. I turn and walk back down the steps and face her, ask her if she's okay. I don't know, are any of us okay, she says. She uses air quotes, I laugh, she's terrible. She and her German boyfriend are awful. She is a terrible actress, but she's still beautiful. And I tell her that. I say, I've always wanted to tell you, you're gorgeous. And you would think it wouldn't mean anything to her in the midst of whatever she's going through because beauty can take you only so far, and you're crying in the rain like everyone else. But it still does. It's still important. Her looks define her, and her face lights up. Please be recognized. Please be admired. I've made her feel better, and I am delighted. So what is that? Is that basically obsessed, or high level of interest, or platonic love, or jealousy, or is it just humanity? Me reaching out and wanting to connect with this woman, this actress, this person, make her feel seen, make her feel known. I leave her and get on the elevator in the building. I'm dripping everywhere, all of me melting. I want to be recognized too, I realize. I want someone to see me. What if I start making art again? What if I just did that? That is the thing I love. That is the thing I miss the most. For so long, I believed I could never catch up, but now I realize there's nothing to catch up to. There's only what I choose to make. There's still time, I think. I have so much time left. Thanks.